You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It's Friday. Join me, the guy who's one of the coolest guys I know. That's right.
Oh, baby.
That's right.
Keep it coming.
That's right. One of the coolest guys I know. And unlike other people I've had on the program, he doesn't care if I call him a pussy. Okay?
Hey! if the shoe fits, you know?
The shoe fits?
Occasionally.
It's a rite of passage, man. If you can't stand that, then you can't hang out with the tribe if you can't stand that. If that's your threshold.
That's absolutely correct.
That's like hanging out on the playground. When you begin to get thrashed by the crew, if you can't hang with that, sorry, man, you can't be in the long hut with us in our tribal venue. Anyway, what's up, first of all? Give us a weather update. I saw that it's in the 50s this morning in Montana. That's always good news for you guys.
Oh, listen, we had 73 yesterday.
Ooh.
It's going to be sunny. It's going to be 70s today, 78 tomorrow. Man, we're in the wheelhouse, baby. That's a juicy flow, mofos.
What's it like to go outside?
I can go outside naked again.
Oh man, let's not go there, but that sounds like a good deal.
Well, I was sitting out on my balcony last night, watching the street scene and enjoying the evening. We took the cover off my grill.
Ooh.
So next week we're going to start grilling.
Love that.
Yeah, baby. You guys have been grilling all year, but me, I finally get to play.
You know what? I will admit to you something that, I thought it was, you know, with the green egg, right? I started buying normal charcoal because I thought it was cheaper.
No.
Yeah, exactly. I started buying like normal match light charcoal because I thought it was cheaper. Okay, we all make mistakes in life. Okay, mm-hmm. We all make mistakes in life. So I bought the green egg charcoal. Oh my God. I feel, you know, and so I went online and I read exactly how Green Egg tells you to prepare the grill and stuff. So I followed their direction. Hello.
Yeah.
What a bozo I was. You know, what an absolute positive bozo. First of all, it burns clean. Okay. It doesn't leave all that ash. Second of all, once you shut all the air ports, right, it cools off, and you can use what's left again. So there's very little ash. You can use it again, and I'm thinking, what an idiot. Why would I do that? Why?
Well, you never listen to me, man. Hey, I haven't used that Kingsford briquette forever. I can't tell you how many years. You get the charcoal or wood chips or whatever that the green egg or serious grillers use, and it's a different world because briquettes have this chemical in them. Why do you think they light quick?
I don't care. I don't care about that. I grew up on that. My mom smoked Parliaments in the car all year. Right? It's good. And how old are you?
74.
There's no way that Kim should be alive today. Just so everybody knows. He is what?
Yeah.
He's been on borrowed time. How long have you been on borrowed time, do you think?
Well, what time is it?
he is partied pretty good in his life, And we grew up, we grew up in a day and age when, look, our moms drank and smoked when they were pregnant. Things that, you know, that you would never do now, right? And then, you know, we grew up in houses where there was smoke all the time. My mom smoked a pack, probably a pack of cigarettes a day, right? And in the car, in the airplanes, you sucked.
Yeah, I remember in the airplane and flying to Europe. They're flying back to Europe.
Oh, my God.
And they smoked those Gauloises, those French cigarettes, the stinkiest damn cigarette in the universe. Oh, P.U.
Oh.
And they had to sit in the back of the plane, so what?
Yeah, you're in an enclosed aluminum tube. Hello?
I can't believe we're still here either, Matt.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm saying. So yeah, so now you want me to get my panties in a bunch because there's a chemical that helps the mass light charcoal light quicker? Come on, man. Is there less of a chemical if I pour the fluid on there? There's still the chemical, still pretty much, I would think, to the same chemical, yes? Or I don't know. So
you build a little newspaper and kindling underneath your wood chips, and you light that, and that's what starts your charcoal, or your real charcoal.
Well,
anybody does, I can't say don't use Kingsford or that kind of stuff, because it's none of my business. You have your own style as a barbecuer, and who am I to say? I can tell you what tastes better, but that's a personal choice.
Well, listen to you. You're being...
The fact that I'm still talking to you all is a wonderful thing.
And it's not like you've made quality choices in terms of healthy living your entire life. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, please. Please. Please, man. The only thing I have not done my whole life is smoke cigarettes. Now, the reason being, I never smoked cigarettes. We were, I don't know, 8, 10 years old. We're playing baseball down at the Little League Park near our house, a bunch of us.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Nellie Fox, the shortstop. And and he always has a big plug of chewing tobacco in his pocket, his back pocket. And he'd, every once in a while, go in, get it, take a chew. And so we thought how that would be cool. So we're walking home and somebody pulls out, not me, but somebody pulls out a plug. And so we each take a bite and start chewing it. And nobody told us to spit the juice out.
Come on. You're telling me you weren't that stupid. Come on.
Oh, yeah, I was. 8 years old, 10 years old. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Break.
Nobody. I mean, come on. The coolest part was the spitting part. I didn't want to necessarily chew the tobacco. I wanted to spit that stuff.
Well, anyway, you never laugh so hard when you see 8 or 9 kids just puking all at once. A symphony of barf. Anyway, that cured me from tobacco, and I just never got into it. And then when I stopped doing sports, everybody was still smoking, and I thought, you know, this is too damn expensive for me. I got other things to do.
Oh, really?
I can buy a bottle of booze or a keg of beer what I pay for a carton of cigarettes.
Yeah, cigarettes aren't cheap. Cigarettes aren't cheap. The all right, I was bad mouthing Chicken Cordon Bleu about an hour ago.
I heard you.
Because it's the rubber chicken circuit, right? When they refer to rubber chicken, when you go to banquets and stuff, they're serving you Chicken Cordon Bleu. That's the rubber chicken circuit. So Chicken Cordon Bleu, I'm sure at the foo-foo restaurants it's good, but the Chicken Cordon Bleu that most of us eat sucks. So we're going to talk about Chicken Cordon Bleu today.
Yep, it is, because the recipe you have That's why you got that information about the rubber chicken circuit.
Yeah.
Because he leads in with that. But the key.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he does.
Because I didn't read it.
I want to be totally transparent with this dish.
I love you for that.
What I like about this dish is something that I used to stuff my cordon bleu with a garlic chive butter and no ham. And then I would seal the breast with toothpicks so that butter didn't run out.
Ah.
And this recipe is spectacular because you take black forest ham, a 1 ounce slice of black forest ham.
Well, wait a minute. Are we going to get into the recipe right now, or
no? I'm just saying that it. That's why I realized that this is a fabulous way to do a chicken cordon bleu, and that in itself makes it worth the effort for me to talk about it. And for you all out there to give it a shot.
Okay.
Because,
all right. You'll agree with me, though. It does have a bad name because of the rubber chicken circuit, yes?
A horrendous name.
Yeah.
And because they can prepare this ahead, the day ahead, and serve it the next day. So that's one plus. But they butterfly the whole chicken breast out, and then they roll it up, and then you got to pin both ends,
yeah.
And then you got to pull the toothpicks out. Otherwise, someone's going to eat a toothpick.
Yeah, we don't want that.
One spot in the throat. And this way, you slice the chicken breast 3 or 4 inch lengthwise, make a deep pocket. It's just fabulous.
Is it? All right. Yeah. So,
and
we're going to talk.
I think everyone who wants a fancy dish, something they can prepare the day ahead, put in the fridge, all prepared, breaded, ready to go, and it keeps up to, 24 hours? Yeah. Refrigerate, covered in plastic, and then you bake the next day.
All right. So we're going to talk. You want to talk about it? The recipe is posted on the website. So if you go to the blog,
yep,
you'll see from Miss B and the chef, Chicken Cordon Bleu. So if you click on that, you'll see the images for the recipe. First of all, I always like to do cooking history. Where does this recipe come from? Is this because to me it looks like this looks like rich people food.
Well, it comes from the French
yes,
centuries ago, probably.
Okay.
And they rolled everything up and did all this, and this is not as time consuming, but that's where it originated. And Italians have a dish, a cordon bleu. Other countries have their own take on it, but this is the one I used to do at Sanders, and I didn't do it very often because of, I'd always sell out, because the thing is when you cut into this chicken breast and the cheese runs out,
yeah,
it's pretty tasty.
Okay. All right. So everybody can follow along on your scorecard as we kind of walk through the recipe. First of all, let's talk ingredients. What are the ingredients of chicken cordon bleu?
An 8 ounce chicken breast.
That's not small.
8 ounce for each person.
Okay.
And we're going to assume that there's 4 people for dinner.
All right.
And you adjust the recipe accordingly.
Got it.
But you get 4 8-ounce chicken breasts. You get 8 ounce, that's 2 slices of ham per chicken breast.
Whoa.
Okay.
That's a lot. That's a lot, isn't it?
It is. That's why it's so damn good. and you get a half a cup, a quarter of a cup of grated. Emphasis on grated. Don't use a slice, goddammit. You grate it because the meltability is quite exceptional this way when you grate it.
When it's grated.
And then you have 2 slices of ham, and then a quarter cup in each slice, and then you lay the cheese across the ham, and then you roll it up in the ham. This is the key to the highway, folks. By rolling the cheese up in the ham, it seals the cheese inside the ham slice. And so you have this tight little tube, and you get 2 of those. And you set them aside, and then you take your chicken breast, an 8-ounce, and you go through the largest part, and you cut a 3 to 4 inch slice down towards the tip of it, but you don't go through the other side. You make a deep pocket. That's the art form, folks, is not to poke your paring knife all the way through the chicken breast. Don't piss me off here. you'll see it. You'll understand right what I'm talking about.
All right.
And then these ham, rolled up cheese and ham are real tight, and you stuff each one side by side lengthwise into the open pocket, and you jam it in there tight, and then you put the second one in tight, and then you pat it down a little bit, try the closure, there'll still be an opening. But because you have the ham there,
yeah,
that'll keep the cheese inside the ham. And we're going to bread it anyway, so that'll add more sealant. Okay? And then you cover it, and then you let that rest for about 30 minutes under saran wrap in the refrigerator. And then you go ahead and make your breadcrumbs. And another thing is I have always loved, and this recipe has, Ritz crackers. That's R-I-T-Z, Ritz crackers.
Ritz
you and
crackers.
I have been eating it our whole life.
Forever.
Forever, and it's still the best one for me. I absolutely love it. And then you have some white bread, and you pulse that in a Cuisinart, and to chunky, and you drizzle a little butter in there, and then you put that mixture on a baking sheet, and you 3 to 5 minutes at a 450 degree oven, because you have to preheat the oven to 450 degrees for this recipe, and just 3 minutes or so, and they'll brown, and then you pull it out and you let them cool, and you can when they're cool, you put them in a dish. And you know, when you make an egg wash, this recipe has, nice Dijon mustard. Before I go any further, I want to recommend you use a nice smoked black forest ham. They have several recommendations in the magazine. I'd like, you can use boar's head. You can get that in any deli. Or whatever you have, and you don't want it too thick, the slice, so, you know, about an ounce. And then, that cheese should be Swiss Gruyere or some imported Gruyere because of the nutty flavor of the cheese as opposed to domestic Swiss cheese, which has some flavor, but it doesn't have the zip and the meltability of imported Swiss cheese, whether it's Gruyere, the French make a Gruyere up in the mountains, also. So that is my recommendation, is get good ham and good cheese. And that'll go a long way in making this a deluxe meal. Now, after you've made your breading up and it's cool, you have three dishes. One with flour and one with an egg and Dijon mustard mix, and then one with your Ritz cracker breadcrumb toasted mix.
Okay, hold on. I've got an email for you. Does Kim use already seasoned breadcrumbs?
No. This Ritz cracker has seasoning, and the bread is just white bread, a good hearty white bread, not Wonder Bread. And you only need, for this recipe, four slices of bread. So if you're going to buy white bread, buy something you're going to eat besides this recipe.
Okay.
But Ritz crackers are already flavored, you know, with however they make them.
With Ritz. And, with they're full of Ritz.
Yeah, they're full of Ritz.
They're full of Ritz, baby.
And that's all you want. Now, what you do is before, when you get ready to set the raw chicken with the ham and cheese stuffed in there, salt and pepper them liberally on both sides. And then cover them, saran wrap, and put them in the fridge. Okay? Now, you have, it's 30 minutes past, you pull those chicken breasts out, and you, one at a time, you take each one. Now, you have a baking sheet. It's about 11.5 by 16.5 inches. It's in the business, we call it a half a sheet pan. And it has about a 1 inch raised side all the way around. Okay? And then you get that ready. Okay? But before that, we're going to bread the chicken breast. Now, you take them, you toss them in the flour, you roll it in the flour. You don't just toss them around. But then you shake any excess flour. Then you put that chicken breast, the floured chicken breast, in the egg and mustard mixture. And that, you make sure it's all covered, and then you let it drip off, and then you put it in the bread crumb mixture and Ritz cracker mixture, and you press down so it sticks to the egg wash and forms a seal, and do it all the way around on the chicken breast. Then you put it on a plate, the four chicken breasts, cover it tightly with saran wrap, and put it in the fridge. And then you're ready for the next day. And the next day, the other important things, you have your baking sheet, and you pull the chicken breasts out, and while the oven's preheating, you have the chicken breasts sitting on the counter. And it'll take 20 minutes. I don't know your oven, but you heat it to 450 degrees. And you have your shelves set at the lowest position and then the middle position, because we're going to start the chicken breast out on the very bottom rack, because you want that to be the bottom crumbs. Now, you can do two ways. You can have a raised rack, you know, that lifts the chicken breast off the pan, or you can put it right on the pan. Myself, I would use a raised rack so the wind circulates underneath in the oven and guarantees a crisp bottom. But either way works. Okay? And then you bake this for about 10 minutes on 450 on the lowest rack. And then you pull that out after 10 minutes and you put it on the middle rack and turn your oven down to 400 degrees. That's really important because you don't want to blacken the breadcrumbs. You want to bake it. And then you cook it for 20, 25 minutes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I know I can. This sounds like you have to really, you know, some dishes you can kind of prepare and then you put in the oven and you come back. This sounds like a dish that you have to pay attention to when you cook it.
Yes, it does, because, you know, you're talking about 30 to 35 minutes total cooking time. And while it's in the oven, once you transfer it, you know, you can be preparing your side dishes.
Right.
Whether it's a salad, whether it's you want rice, you cook the rice. You know you're busy in the kitchen. You set your table, but my recommendation is you serve this with a rice, a dish, and a salad. You can also serve it with vegetables. And no starch and a salad. But this dish is real good with anything from a Caesar salad to any your favorite salad and your favorite salad dressing. Tossed lettuce and whatever you put in your salad.
Got it.
It sounds real complicated, and that's why you can prepare it the day ahead. Because then you come in, and just like I've always tried to convey to everyone, I like to party, and I don't like to be slaving in the kitchen for 12 hours before my guests arrive, and to all I can enjoy is a cocktail, because I'm too quick to eat, and that's just the reason I like this dish. I think I hope somebody out there tries it, but I would test run it first to see if you want to serve it at a dinner party. But it is a really nice thing to do. Now, a lot of people will take that chicken, restaurants will take it, and they'll slice the, when it comes out of the oven, they'll let it rest for 5 minutes. And then they'll slice it. But I don't like that because all the cheese runs out once you slice it. And I like serving the whole chicken breast. So when you cut into it yourself, the cheese oozes out a little bit for every bite. And then it doesn't harden, you know, when you pre-slice it.
Why do restaurants do that?
Because they're foo-foo. I served the whole chicken breast.
They're foo-foo. So they do it for the... Well, they do it for the presentation, so they think it looks cooler if the cheese is out?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Oh, okay.
It's all about the visual. Well, yes, I agree with the visual, but in this particular dish, I don't want all the cheese to run out. And then by the time I get to the end of the chicken breast, the cheese is cool. I want a runny, drippy stuff. Because that's what brings out the flavor when you melt cheese. Like in a fondue or something like that, you know. It just has all the flavor of that.
I'm with you. I just, no, in listening to you, I mean, I don't know that I've ever heard you spend more time on this is what you have to do when you're cooking it for a recipe that we've discussed. And so I, interesting.
Well, when we talked the last 2 weeks and the people that have read this reference magazine and have tried things, and have showed that it's appreciated and it's cool. And it's time to step up the recipes now a little bit once in a while.
Oh,
all right. And just, you know, things are still easy to cook in this magazine. That's why it's so great for everyone. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But I feel that this is a recipe that, you know, you prepare it the day before, but it looks real fancy. Even when it's whole, put on the plate with the proper greens or vegetables or rice and vegetables. And if you want to serve a salad first or with it, that's your call. But I just think it'll be a fun, I thought it would be a fun dish for everyone to try.
Got it. I'm with you. Are you a fan of it? Do you enjoy consuming it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I've always rolled it out, pounded the chicken breast, totally butterflied it, and rolled it, and I'm sealing it with toothpicks and stuff, and it comes out fine. But when I saw the cheese rolled up in the ham in this recipe, a light went on and says, "Oh, you dumb SOB. Look, you're in the front row again." And so I think it's rolling the cheese in the ham that makes this dish so much easier than a lot of people would deep fry this dish. The restaurants deep fry this dish. Well, and at Sanders, I would cook them in olive oil and brown them and fry them and then let them rest after they were browned. But this way, you know, you're cutting a pocket in the chicken. You're not rolling it up, so you don't have three layers of chicken to cook through. You just have the bottom and the top and one side and then the opening where the ham is. But that's sealed by breading. So I think it's a lot easier to do. And when you cut into that puppy and the cheese oozes out, the cheese oozed it out when I did it for the restaurant. I think this will be better now.
Got it. So deep frying to me is, why do we deep fry? It's such a violent way to cook. I don't know how to say it.
Well, people been frying things and fat, rendered pork fat or beef fat and stuff for years. But baking and grilling, and sautéing in a little minimal oil in a sauté pan is a lot less violent. They have little countertop deep fryers now you can buy that are most excellent. It has a little cover when you're not using it, the basket, to cover the oil and let it cool off. But at Sanders, we used to use the oil, and I'd strain it every single night. Because you're deep frying stuff, you're cooking French fries. Well, you have to do that with French fries. That's just the way it's done.
But, McDonald's made a whole industry on that, yes?
Yeah.
Right? They Ray Kroc sitting out in the parking lot. Why are all these people showing up? It doesn't open till 11:30. Why are they here at 10:45? And asking people, it's the French fries. They make the best French fries you've ever had. And so what do you do different? Well, we start with new oil every day. We don't use oil that there's been fish in. We don't use oil that there's been, that was saved from yesterday. And we've done chicken cordon bleu, and we don't do that. Yeah. It's all, and so McDonald's essentially, they created an empire based on the French fry, honestly. That was the hook, right?
That is the hook, and it was the hook for me. When I used my deep fryer, was to strain it every night. I usually got 2 days. It cleaned up really nice because you have a cone filter you put in this cone, and it drains into a 5 gallon bucket, and it strains all the impurities. Any French fries that have gone black and been in there all night, that's taken out. So you have fresh oil for the next day. But before, they didn't have that. So you go into a place and they might have been working on with the same oil, and they just add more oil when the old stuff burns down, which it does. And so after the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth day of using the same oil, it's pretty rancid.
Interesting.
Yeah, and McDonald's, folks, McDonald's to this day still make the best French fries. I'm sorry. I, at Sanders, this is true confession. I'm proud of it, but they make McDonald's French fries in a potato plant called Simplot in Grand Forks. And I would get, they'd come in a case, and I keep them in my freezer. And then when I was going to use it the night before I used the French fries, I took them out and put them in my refrigerator. Now, the reason being, is when you drop something frozen into oil, it drops the temperature of the oil, and it sucks up the grease because it's not hot. The oil should be about 375, and it'll drop it down to 350, 340. It gets greasy if you have a big load of fries. But when you drop in refrigerated fry, it has no ice crystals on it. You pour them in there, and the oil drops maybe 5 degrees to 270. So you have that. That's why you have that crisp French fry is because it's not frozen. Now, you go into places, they'll open the freezer, they'll pull out the whether it's whatever it's breaded, the fish fillet or whatever in the hell it is, the French fries, and they'll throw them in the fryer, and you'll see it bubble up like crazy, and that's the water reacting to the oil. And McDonald's does it the same way. In fact, true confessions here, that's how I learned the trick, because I are good friends with a family that own McDonald's in town. And I said, why has McDonald's always been my favorite French fry and I use them today? And he says, well, because we pull the French fries out and then sit 2 or 3 days in the refrigerator. And so it's not frozen. And so the oil temperature doesn't drop. Oh, yeah, dummy. lights went on and that's it. But for me, I like a little crisper French fry, so I would leave it in about 20 seconds longer than McDonald's did, 30 seconds maybe. because it's still tender in the inside, but I like it a little crisper outside to my French fry. So there is my the key to the highway when you're cooking French fries.
I was going to say that that's probably the longest French fry dissertation I've ever heard in my life.
Well, you know, I don't know many people that don't eat French fries. And so, whether you make them yourself or try to make them, or go to a place, and if you get soggy French fries, that is why.
That's on you, man. If you get soggy French fries, if you'll stand for that act of aggression, come on, man. What's wrong with you?
That also is laziness on the person that is cooking your French fries.
Oh, really? Laziness on their part?
Yeah, to pull it out of the freezer and throw it in the fryer frozen. It's bullshit.
Oh. Listen, oh, hey, all right, all right. I didn't know we were going there today, but okay, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. What?
Well, you know.
Go ahead.
That's the beauty of you, Matt. You lead me in whatever direction I have to go.
Oh, hey, don't start blaming this on me. Every time he does something crazy, he blames it on me. It's like having your crazy little brother around. He keeps getting you in trouble. And then it was like, and then it wasn't his fault. Well, I didn't do it. Anyway, all right. What I've got an email. I've got a couple emails for you.
Great. I love emails.
It's something you make for a special person in your life.
Yes.
It takes time and attention and shows someone that they really matter if you're going to take 2 days to prepare it. And then there's 1, 2, 3, 4 exclamation marks.
It's true. Because you have this chicken cordon bleu, and then you eat the circuit chicken, the lecture circuit chicken.
That'll kill you.
Chicken.
Yeah, that's awful.
I'm not so sure in certain places that do this. They don't have a bank of deep fryers. They pull them out of the freezer, drop them in the deep fryer 6 at a time, and then pull them out and then serve them up like that. I wouldn't be surprised the next banquet you go to and you say, geez, this is a little bit soggy, the bread, the crust. Then you'll know. You got duped. It's called rubber chicken.
So the rubber banquet circuit, are those deep fried or are those baked?
Well, it depends how many people.
Okay.
And how big is the banquet hall,
right,
and what kind of kitchen facility they have in that banquet hall. If they have a lot of ovens, they'll bake them. If they don't have a lot of ovens, they're probably deep fried.
You couldn't deep fry for a lot of people, could you?
Yes, you can.
You can? You better have a lot of deep fryers then, yes?
Yeah, you know, you have maybe 6 deep fryers, 4 deep fryers. You know, there are these banquet halls that have that kind of facility.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
But for the most part, they'll bake them for these banquets.
Hmm.
Because you can put these chicken breasts on sheet pans and throw in a full sheet pan, like 18 by 16 sheet pans, and you can throw those in maybe 50 at a time into one oven, and you turn the convection, the wind oven part, you turn the fan on so they cook a little more evenly. And that's how they do it for the most part. They bake it.
Got it.
Ovens.
Got it. Another one. This is entitled French Fries. I love French fries. My heart started thumping when Kim went on his little rant about French fries. Could he give us home cooking instructions to make great French fries? Can you?
Yes, I can.
All right, let's hear it.
Now, the real way they started in France, French fries, is they fresh cut their potatoes. They're raw. They soak them in water so the starch gets out of it. Then they'll drain them, pat them dry, and now listen to me closely.
All right.
This can be a two-day process also, or in the morning and then at night cook them.
French fry?
Listen, you've got this raw French fry been pat dried. You preheat your French fryer to 325, which is not 375, and they're twice cooked. You parboil them, so to speak, and then you don't cook them for very long, 5 minutes, and then you pull them out and you let them drain. And then you put them on paper towels, let them drain on that, and then you turn your French fryer, if you have one on your counter, you turn that up to 375.
Okay.
And then you put them back in the fryer at 375, and then you'll get the perfect French fry. That's how the fancy restaurants do it. That's how it was invented in Europe and France, where they French fries, obviously the name, started. But in Europe, they call them palm frites. P-O-M-M-E-F-R-I-T-Z. Palm frites.
Palm frites.
Palm frites.
There you go.
And they some people serve them with ketchup in Holland and the French, they eat their French fries with mayonnaise.
Wait, we're not.
I'm
don't
killing you out there.
No. Wait, we don't judge. I mean, and try it. I mean, up in Manitoba, and I've got an email about Manitoba. Oddly enough, in Manitoba, they serve it with gravy, right? What do they call that?
Yeah.
Vinegar.
Poutines.
Yeah.
Poutines. They serve it with cheese curds. Cheese curds and gravy over French fries. And then you can go any way you want with meat on there. I mean, it's phenomenal. And it's 100% Canadian. And it's trickled down here in the States now, in the northern tier sections, all along the Canadian border. But it is 100% Canadian, and it is a serious plate of food. That's all you're going to eat.
Okay, here's another email. Mac, I was watching.
Let me digress a minute about the French fries. Or you buy, if you can find a shoestring potato in the freezer.
That was Kathleen.
You take it home. You take the bag home. You sit it in the refrigerator and let them thaw out, and the next day you could cook them in your countertop deep fryer at 375 just once. That's the normal way that a human being should do it.
Okay.
Unless you really fancy.
All right. Kathleen, she would normally, she liked a shoestring French fry. And she would bake them. So, you get the.
My mother.
Okay. All right. Here's another email. I was watching the Nashville Winnipeg game last night.
Yeah.
And I know the chef is from up there, and Mac, you lived up there. Are those people always that crazy about hockey, Kim?
Are you kidding me? Yes, they are.
Why?
And Winnipeg, they've got a great team this year. They've taken Nashville. I think Nashville beat them in Winnipeg for the first time in 5 tries this year. UND, Sioux, has a defenseman. The trainer's son, Tucker Pullman, plays for Winnipeg. And, God, there's a couple other North Dakota Sioux players. But, they're crazy about their hockey. When we had the World Juniors, you were here in 2005, Matt. And the Canadians from Winnipeg in Canada, we had the World Juniors in our arena. It seats 12,500 people. Pretty good for a college hockey arena. And an alumni built it for $104 million. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Anyway, the World Juniors were teams from all over the world play, and we got the World Juniors in our building. And the Canadians came down, and everybody was only allowed 1 cup of beer to go when you came up to the window to buy beer.
Yeah,
you could buy 1 cup.
You could buy 1.
It drank the Ralph out of beer.
Yeah.
By the end of the night.
Yeah, they emptied the arena.
The damn keg in the Ralph. And the next night, they changed the rules that you could have 2 beers when you came up. Because, you know, 1 beer would be finished before they left the concourse, and the other beer would get them halfway, a quarter of the way through the next period. So, yeah, they love their beer and hockey up there like nobody's business.
And they got the truth is they've got nothing else, okay? Manitoba is flat farm country, okay? They're not a whole lot. There's the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Canadian Football League. And that's about it.
Yep.
It's a cold, long winter, okay? And so it's a town that's not afraid to have a good time. But, yeah, there's nothing else going on in Manitoba all winter long. They're waiting for farming to come along. If you drive up there, it is like an oasis, and then you see a big town. You drive on the Trans-Canadian Highway, there's nothing except farmland from Western Ontario to Vancouver. There's nothing. It is amazing. It's the Great American Plain that stretches up into Canada. And oh my God. So they got nothing. They have nothing up there. Canada. They've got nothing. This is it.
Everybody has their own, every province has their own hockey team.
No. Saskatchewan doesn't have one, at least not an NHL team.
Where are the Rough Riders from?
The Rough Riders? Who are they?
I thought it was Saskatchewan. That's the football
team. That's a football team, bro.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
My bad.
That's all right. The Rough Riders, that's Red River. The, which is a high school in Kim's hometown. If you haven't watched it, they do this whiteout thing, but they are absolutely crazy about their hockey. And it is all they got. They got nothing else. So yeah. So the answer to that is, if you're a Nashville fan and you thought it was crazy in Nashville, yeah, you don't know crazy because you've seen the Canadians do crazy. And I will tell you this, one other thing. That night that Kim's talking about where they drank the arena dry, I think I was in Afghanistan, but there was a snowstorm that hit that night, and they closed down the interstate, and they had to open up the local, the domed football arena that seats about 20,000. And so, so you had all these inebriated Canadians, and it was a pretty good party, as it turned out. that they didn't have anywhere to go. The hotels were full, and they opened up kind of a civic emergency. You had all these people, and you didn't have any place to house them. And if you didn't find a place, and they tried to sleep in their cars because you couldn't get on the interstate, it was closed. Then people were going to die. So it was a pretty. Let me tell you this about the Canadians. They are not afraid of a good time. Okay.
No.
They are not.
They're a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun.
They are not afraid of a good time.
The World Juniors was the best 10 days of my restaurant when the Canadians were in town.
Ever?
The scouts for the NHL, a couple of them are from Grand Forks. They rented two back rooms, and they always full reservation for the whole night. And every night, the bar is supposed to close at 2. I didn't get out of there till somewhere between 4 and 5 a.m. And one time, I'm sitting at the bar and with a bunch of other scouts and players and Wayne Gretzky, and the cop comes in and sees Gretzky and says, Kim, turn the goddamn window lights out and go in the back and don't be showing the lights in the window. It's 3:30 in the morning.
But hey, you got to keep it open. If the Gretz is in the house, come on, man, right?
Hey, man. But he was in there every night. Every night he was in town, he was in there. And it was in a great business for the restaurant.
The point was it was a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they have so much fun.
Yeah, the Canadian. Let me tell you this: I don't like Canadians as a rule, okay? Because they hate Americans. Okay, you may not know this, and you think that we're a lot alike, you know, us and the Canadians, but we're really not. Okay, we're really not. The Canadians hate us. So, and they may not say that to your face, but those of us who've lived it, right? We know. We know the truth. And they could say whatever they want, but we know the truth. They go off on America. They go off on Americans. Check out this little gem, right? This is about Kim's restaurant.
Oh, and by the way, Sanders, one of the best restaurants I've eaten at the last 10 years of my life. Huh? Have you been down to that joint? Just had an astounding meal there, and I actually paid, so you know this is sincere.
Ladies and gentlemen.
How about that? Dennis Miller giving you some love. So, yeah, Kim's Restaurant was the place, and I would tell you, from Minneapolis to Seattle, probably the best restaurant in the upper plains until he closed it. So, Sanders, 1907 in beautiful, beautiful downtown Grand Forks, North Dakota. But, yeah. Yeah, Dennis Miller with a little love. Yeah, he got up on stage, and right at the start of his act, he said that. I was like, so, and I was there in the audience, sitting in the upper deck, and I was like, oh shit, I got to get that audio. Little love for the big man. That was good.
It was fun. I liked celebrities because I wouldn't let anybody go near them and ask for autographs. And that's, I think, why they like me. Because, you know, you go into a place and you're somebody famous and you can't eat your meal. Everybody, oh, can I have an autograph? Can I have a selfie? Yada, yada, yada. No, you cannot. I learned that when they,
big timer.
I lived in Port Townsend, Washington.
Big timer.
And they filmed Office and the Gentleman there.
Yeah.
And they were there for 3 months. And that was an interesting experience.
All right. You got any big plans for the weekend?
No, I'm going to watch the Dodgers tonight. They're on.
Yeah, the Dodgers, man. They're in trouble. The wheels are coming off. They suck. They're shortstop.
But I did see the Yankees come from three back in the ninth, bottom of the ninth, and win 6-5 last night.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You enjoyed that a
little bit. A little bit. They struggled in Houston last year, especially during the playoffs, and Houston's got, again, they're the defending champions. They've got great pitchers, and the Yankees beat them 3 out of 4. So they swept the Angels. They went on a trip that you were hoping that they'd break even on, and they were 6-1 on that trip. So you can't – and the game they lost was they lost 2-1 to Justin Verlander. So let me tell you about the Yankees. They're going to get better because they've got people that are hurt. Their first baseman's been hurt. He's coming back, and their third baseman's been hurt. He's coming back. So they've got a problem with it. They've got too many good players, and we'll see. So, no, I'm having a good time with baseball. I'm loving it. But hockey, you watch hockey and the craziness that happened in Winnipeg, it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. The NHL playoffs, one of the great –
Yeah,
when the great
the hockey playoffs are worth watching as many games as you can, folks.
Yep.
And the crowds are bonkers, especially when they play in Canada. But it doesn't matter. Philadelphia, they're crazy there.
Crazy. And the sport itself, fast and violent. And they stopped fighting for the most part, although TJ Oshie fought last night at the end of the game. But for the most part, they don't fight. It's just fast, violent, awesome sports. It's great. Anyway. All right, sir. Thank you very much for the visit today.
Pleasure's all mine. I think we're going to do something fish next week.
All right. We love fish. Have a good one. I'll talk to you.
Okay. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You bet.
Thank you, everyone.
That is the one and only P. Kimball Holmes on a Friday edition of Auburn Radio. Gunner, coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.